All right. Well, welcome again. Book of Judges is a good book to be in for Palm Sunday. We've got the story of Gideon is going to be a little longer, so I'm going to take this week and then the week after Easter to complete his story. The spiral down continues as we've looked through how the judges' cycle is going. They sin, and then the Lord sells them or gives them into captivity to one of the neighboring countries, or sometimes, in this case, it's going to be a little more local. And then they cry out to God. And so far, when they've done that, God has sent a deliverer, a judge, and the process continues. It's a little bit different when we get to Gideon. Gideon shows up. His name is in the Hall of Faith in Hebrews chapter 11. And again, it's through the weakness of man that God's strength is made perfect. Gideon demonstrates weakness continuously through his story. And God still uses him, which is kind of encouraging because that means maybe he can use us too. Let's pray. Father, thanks for your word. We thank you that you are the deliverer. You are the star, the hero of each one of these chapters. Forgive us for the fallen condition that we have embraced too often. Lead us into your righteousness. Chapter 6, verse 1. Again, that word, again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord, and for 7 years he gave them into the hands of the Midianites. Who are the Midianites? Well, those are descendants of Abraham and his second wife, Keturah. They probably have mixed some with the Ishmaelites because they ended up settling in a similar area, and when the Midianites are said to have taken Joseph and sold him into slavery in Egypt, it's kind of interchangeable at that point, Midianites, Ishmaelites. So these are descendants of Abraham either way. Verse 2, because the power of Midian was so oppressive, the Israelites prepared shelters for themselves in mountain clefts, caves, and strongholds. They couldn't even hang out in their normal towns and cities. They're hiding. This is very oppressive time. Whenever the Israelites planted their crops, the Midianites, Amalekites, and other eastern peoples invaded the country. Now, they'd had peace for 40 years after Deborah and Barak had been successful in judging and saving Israel, and they'd been able to take that beautiful, fertile valley, and they'd been out there planting crops, and everything's going well for 40 years. Now, not so good. And they're hiding out. They don't know what to do. You've got the Midianites, like I said, descendants of Abraham and Keturah. And then you've got the Amalekites. Those would be Esau's descendants. So, pretty close relationships. Jacob became Israel. So Jacob and Esau are twins. And you've got
Moses' father-in-law was a Midianite.
You know, and there was a time when Moses was fleeing Egypt, and he ran to the country and found a Midianite wife. There's relationships with the Midianites. I mean, these are relatives. So you've got a bunch of relatives that God says, okay, the relatives that weren't on my favored side according to the book, they're the ones that are going to take control of you right now. Any of you have black sheep in the family? Any of you are the black sheep of the family? You know, God uses all of us. And we just need to be available to him. Hopefully we wouldn't be as oppressive as these people had been. Verse 4, they camped on the land and ruined the crops all the way to Gaza and did not spare a living thing for Israel, neither a sheep nor cattle nor donkeys. They came up with their livestock and their tents like swarms of locusts. It was impossible to count the men and their camels. They invaded the land to ravage it. They had a purpose. They came in there on purpose to take everything and wipe it out to oppress the Israelites. And that was according to God's plan because they'd done evil in the sight of the Lord. Midian so impoverished the Israelites that they cried out to the Lord for help. 7 years later. When the Israelites cried out to the Lord, now every other time we've read this, when the Israelites cried out to the Lord sent a deliverer, a judge. Not this time. When the Israelites cried to the Lord because of Midian, he sent them a prophet. And this prophet said, "This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. I brought you up out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. I snatched you from the power of Egypt and from the hand of all your oppressors. I drove them from before you and gave you their land. I said to you, I am the Lord your God. Do not worship the gods of the Amorites." And that would be all of the people living in the land of Canaan. "But you have not listened to me." This sounds like a repeat of what the angel of the Lord had said back in chapter 2, verses 1 through 4. When he showed up at Bochim and he said, you know, "I've done all this for you and you just don't listen. You don't obey." Each other time that they cried out to the Lord, he sent a deliverer. This time he sends a prophet, and this prophet gives them a message of condemnation. "You guys have not listened to God." Sometimes the Lord overlooks our iniquity, our sin, our evil, and sends us salvation to draw us back to him. It's his kindness that leads us to repentance. But sometimes it's necessary for him to send a word of rebuke. And this is one of those times. Verse 11. "The angel of the Lord came and sat down under the oak in Ophrah that belonged to Joash the Abiezrite, where his son Gideon was threshing wheat in a wine press to keep it from the Midianites." It wasn't that he didn't have a threshing floor available. When we get further into the chapter, he uses the threshing floor for something else. But this time he's hiding it out in a wine press, which is probably not anywhere where the wind can get to it. So when he's trying to thresh this wheat, the chaff isn't going to blow away like it normally would on an open floor. And he's trying to keep it there because he's afraid if the Midianites saw some chaff blowing around, they might just come right up there and take whatever he had. The guy's hiding out, and Jesus shows up. That's when you see in the Old Testament the angel of the Lord came. Most often you're going to find that this is a manifestation of Jesus. Verse 12, "When the angel of the Lord appeared to Gideon, he said, 'The Lord is with you, mighty warrior.' 'But sir,' Gideon replied, 'if the Lord is with us, why has all this happened to us? Where are all his wonders that our fathers told us about when they said, did not the Lord bring us up out of Egypt? But now the Lord has abandoned us and put us into the hand of Midian.'" How many of us are like that? That if we don't see God actually working the way we want him to work, it doesn't matter if he says to us, "I'm with you." We're like, "Yeah, right. Where are you? Why aren't you doing what I'm telling you to do?" That's how we treat God. He's with us, even through the hard times. The Lord never left them. Verse 14. "The Lord turned to him and said, 'Go in the strength you have and save Israel out of Midian's hand. Am I not sending you?'" The Lord is with them. He says, "Go in the strength you have." What is the strength that he has? Jesus. It's not his own strength. He's been called a mighty warrior, possibly because of his heritage, and he's from a clan that really was a leader of the Abiezrites. But here he is, hiding out, not looking very mighty, not acting like a warrior. God knows who he is. And God says to him, "Go in the strength you have," right after he says, "I'm with you." And in case he forgot, he says, "Am I not sending you?" So this strength that he has is the strength of the Lord. And this is similar to what many of us would do right after that. But Lord, Gideon asked, how can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my family. In a way, that's true. How can he save Israel? He can't. That's not what God said here. God said, go in my strength. The Lord is with you. I'm with you. Go in the strength that you have. And again, the Lord in verse 16 says, he answered, I will be with you, and you will strike down all the Midianites together. Gideon replied, if now I have found favor in your eyes, give me a sign that is that it is really you talking to me. He's struggling here. The Lord is with him, and he's going, if it's really you, God. We do that a lot. Are you really there, Lord? Give me a sign that it's really you talking to me. And here, all he's asking for a sign is that he's going to go fix something to give him as a gift, an offering, and he wants him to still be there when he gets back, because he knows it's going to take a while to fix this. Please do not go away until I come back and bring my offering and set it before you. And the Lord said, I will wait until you return. Now you realize they're in the seventh year of a famine. For 7 years they've been oppressed. The Lord said, I will wait until you return. So Gideon went in, prepared a young goat, and from an ephah of flour, he made bread without yeast. That's a lot of flour. An ephah would be about 3/5 of a bushel, which would compute to about 22 liters. So if you think of 2-liter bottles, fill 11 of those with flour. It's going to make a big loaf of bread, enough for a pretty good-sized family. Putting the meat in a basket and its broth in a pot, he brought them out and offered them to him under the oak. The angel of God said to him, take the meat and the unleavened bread, place them on this rock, and pour out the broth. And Gideon did so. Now, before we get too much on Gideon's case for unbelief, how many of us, if we were starving for 7 years, you know, every time we try to get a crop together, it gets taken away from us. We really can't find any animals. They've been able to hide this goat somehow. They've got some flour. And he prepares that and gives it as a gift. So he's really demonstrating some faith here, more than we give him credit for, more than most of us would do. And he's saying, okay, you take this. If you're really the Lord, you'll know how to fix all this. And when we offer something to the Lord, we need to be prepared to let him do with it what he wants to do. I know when the little boy brought his lunch to the Lord, and he broke it and fed 5,000 men, that's probably what, if I were Gideon, I'd be kind of hoping for something like that. Could you take this that I'm giving you and make it multiply so that we can feed everybody here? Verse 21, with the tip of the staff that was in his hand, the angel of the Lord touched the meat and the unleavened bread. Fire flared from the rock, consuming the meat and the bread. And the angel of the Lord disappeared. I think he's got Gideon's attention. When Gideon realized that it was the angel of the Lord, he exclaimed, ah, sovereign Lord, I have seen the angel of the Lord face to face. And he's concerned. The Lord said to him, I thought the Lord had disappeared. You know, you don't have to be able to see God for him to be with you. I know the first few times I read this, I'm thinking, this must be a mistake, because the Lord disappeared and he didn't say that he came back, so he must be gone. But the Lord is with us. He promises to be with us. He'll never leave us. He'll never forsake us. Whether we see him or not, he is here. The Lord said to him, peace, do not be afraid. You are not going to die. It was understood that if you saw the Lord face to face, that you would die. So Gideon built an altar to the Lord there. He's still in a little private place, kind of hiding out. Built an altar there and called it the Lord is Peace, or Shalom. to this day it stands in Ophrah of the Abiah's rites. That same night, God didn't waste any time here, that same night the Lord said to him, take the second bull from your father's herd, the one 7 years old. I don't know if that's a coincidence that they've been oppressed for 7 years and he's saying, take a 7-year-old bull. Tear down your father's altar to Baal and cut down the Asherah pole beside it. Cut down the groves that are beside it. Then build a proper kind of altar, an altar that's layered with stones, to the Lord your God on the top of the height. Now, he'd already made an altar to the Lord, kind of in private. And God's saying, let's make this public. And by the way, your family's got some problems. Your dad's been leading people in false worship. So, clean up your family. Go public with your proclamation that I'm God and Baal is not. The symbol of Baal, by the way, was a bull. So he's taking a bull to pull down the bull. And he's going to sacrifice a bull, or Baal and all of it. He's giving it to the Lord. Using the wood of the Asherah pole that you cut down, offer the second bull as a burnt offering. Verse 27. So Gideon took 10 of his servants and did as the Lord told him. Now, if I'm sitting here telling God that I'm the least of my clan and that I'm nothing, and then I've got 10 servants that I can grab and say, hey, come and help me, they probably were pretty well off. But because he was afraid of his family and the men of the town, he did it at night rather than in the daytime. In the morning, when the men of the town got up, there was Baal's altar, demolished, with the Asherah pole beside it, cut down, and the second bull sacrificed on the newly built altar. They asked each other, who did this? Didn't take much to get one of those 10 guys to talk. When they carefully investigated, they were told Gideon, son of Joash, did it. Now, in the Old Testament, the penalty for idolatry with Israel was stoning. It was death. If you were to worship a false god, you were to die. Here it gets flipped around. The primary form of worship in the country right now was worshiping a false god, Baal. And the people that had been worshiping Baal want Gideon to be killed for worshiping the true God. That's how we twist things. The men of the town demanded of Joash, bring out your son, he must die because he has broken down Baal's altar and cut down the Asherah pole beside it. But Joash replied to the hostile crowd around him, are you going to plead Baal's case? Are you trying to save him? Whoever fights for him shall be put to death by morning. If Baal really is a god, he can defend himself when someone breaks down his altar. So that day they called Gideon Drubabel, saying, let Baal contend with him, because he broke down Baal's altar. Now, if Baal had been a true god, he would have contended with him, and that would have been the end of the story. But Baal was a false god, and every time someone said Gideon's name now, let Baal contend, it's like, yeah, it's a mocking of this false god. For the rest of the time that Gideon is alive, he goes by the name of Drubabel, and every time someone says that, it's like, yeah, Baal's nothing. He couldn't contend. There's someone higher than Baal. Verse 33, now all the Midianites, Amalekites, and other eastern peoples joined forces and crossed over the Jordan and camped in the valley of Jezreel. Then the Spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon, and he blew a trumpet, summoning the Abizarites to follow him. So his local clan, he's blowing a trumpet. He's like, you guys follow me. He sent messengers throughout Manasseh, the rest of the tribe of Manasseh, calling them to arms, and also into Asher, Zebulun, and Naphtali, so that they too went up to meet him, or to meet with them. Gideon said to God, and here's that little word again that Gideon keeps using, if you will save Israel by my hand as you have promised, look, I will place a wool fleece on the threshing floor, you know, the one that I was afraid to use. If there is dew only on the fleece and all the ground is dry, then I will know that you will save Israel by my hand, as you said. And that is what happened. Gideon rose early the next day. He squeezed the fleece and wrung out the dew, a bowl full of water. Then Gideon said to God, do not be angry with me. Let me make just one more request. Allow me one more test with the fleece. The reason he's asking God not to be angry with him is because he knows he's going against Scripture. In Deuteronomy 6, verse 16, it says, "Do not test the Lord your God, as you did at Massah or Meribah." And that goes back to the Exodus 17 passage where the Israelites were angry with God because they're going to die out in the wilderness. They needed water. And they tested him. And he's telling them, don't test the Lord your God. Another way that they've already tested God as a nation is they've gone after other gods. And God clearly says, when you go after other gods, there will be consequences. Don't test me that way. Gideon's asking forgiveness. God is very gracious here. So that night, God did so. He made the fleece dry, and all the ground around it was covered with dew. Chapter 7. Early in the morning, Zerubbabel, that is Gideon, and all his men camped at the spring of Herod. The camp of Midian was north of them in the valley near the hill of Morah. So they can see this humongous camp of the enemy. And they've all gathered together. They're going to go up. The Lord said to Gideon, "You have too many men for me to deliver Midian into their hands. In order that Israel may not boast against me that her own strength has saved her, announce now to the people, anyone who trembles with fear may turn back and leave Mount Gilead." 22,000 men left, while 10,000 remained. So they'd gathered an army of 32,000, and one of the things, if you go back to Deuteronomy chapter 20, that they do before they go into battle, it's like if there's anybody here that is starting to build a house, hasn't finished it, anybody that's engaged that needs to be married and hasn't been married yet, you know, there's a number of things. One of the things was, if there's anybody that's frightened, go home. And out of the 32,000, looking up that valley and seeing that huge enemy camp, I'm surprised 10,000 were still there. I'm really surprised Gideon was still there, because I know he was frightened. But 10,000 remained, 22,000 went back home. The Lord said to Gideon, "There are still too many men. Take them down to the water, and I will sift them for you. If I say this one shall go with you, he shall go. But if I say this one shall not go with you, he shall not go." So Gideon took the men down to the water. There the Lord told him, "Separate those who lap the water with their tongues like a dog from those who kneel down to drink." 300 men lapped with their hands to their mouths. All the rest got down on their knees to drink. And in commentaries and in sermons, I've heard all kinds of explanations as to why these 300 must be better than the others. I don't see it. God just said, "I'm going to divide you." And then God looks and, okay, here's like 9,700 in one group and 300 in another. And in his wisdom, he says, "You're a proud bunch, and if you win with 9,700, you're going to think you did it. Let's take 300. The Lord said to Gideon, "With the 300 men that lapped, I will save." So this is still the Lord's battle. "I will save you and give the Midianites into your hands. Let all the other men go, each to his own place." So Gideon sent the rest of the Israelites to their tents, but kept the 300 who took over the provisions and trumpets of the others. Now the camp of Midian lay below him in the valley. During that night, again, God's just not wasting time. He's chosen Gideon and he's saying it's time to move. Probably because if Gideon had time to think about it, he would have bailed too. I think most of us would. "During that night, the Lord said to Gideon, 'Get up, go down against the camp, because I am going to give it into your hands.'" He's told them that a few times. And he still knows Gideon. He says, "If you are afraid to attack," here's a plan B, "if you're afraid to attack, go down to the camp with your servant Purah and listen to what they are saying. Afterward, you will be encouraged to attack the camp." So he and Purah, his servant, went down to the outposts of the camp. The Midianites, the Amalekites, and all the other eastern peoples had settled in the valley, thick as locusts. Their camels could no more be counted than the sand on the seashore. Gideon arrived just as a man was telling a friend his dream. "I had a dream," he was saying. "A round loaf of barley bread came tumbling into the Midianite camp. It struck the tent with such force that the tent overturned and collapsed." Interesting dream. You got a loaf of bread rolling down a hill and smashing a tent to pieces. His friend responded, "This can be nothing other than the sword of Gideon, son of Joash, the Israelite. God has given the Midianites and the whole camp into his hands." Even the enemy was aware that God was the one that was going to be victorious here. When Gideon heard the dream and its interpretation, he worshipped God. He fell prostrate and he's laying down there saying, "Lord, Lord." Can you imagine? You know, there's well over 100,000 people in this camp. And he just happens to come up to a couple guys that are sharing a dream story that just happens to be about him. A lot of coincidence going on here, huh? So he returned to his camp, to the camp of Israel, and called out, "Get up! The Lord has given the Midianite camp into your hands." Dividing the 300 men into three companies, he placed trumpets and empty jars in the hands of all of them with torches inside. "Watch me," he told them. "Follow my lead. When I get to the edge of the camp, do exactly as I do. When I and all who are with me blow our trumpets, then from all around the camp blow yours and shout, 'For the Lord and for Gideon.'" Gideon and the 100 men with him reached the edge of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch, so around 10 o'clock at night, just after they had changed the guard. They blew their trumpets and broke the jars that were in their hands. The three companies blew the trumpets and smashed the jars, grasping the torches in their left hands and holding in their right hands the trumpets they were to blow. They shouted, "A sword for the Lord and for Gideon." While each man held his position around the camp, all the Midianites ran, crying out as they fled. This doesn't sound right to me. Here's my battle plan. I'm going to break a jar, blow a trumpet, and then hold a lantern up so you can see that there's only one of me. And everybody around's doing that. So you've got all of these 300 lanterns, torches that are shining, and anybody that would have looked there would have seen this area is lit up and there's no one but these 300. Do you remember that story in 2 Kings when Elisha is explaining to his servant, "Greater are those that are with us than those that are against us"? And he asks the Lord to open his eyes. And there's multitudes, hosts of angel warriors standing there. And it doesn't say it here, but I just have to think that, you know, with these lanterns and torches and everybody's looking up there, they probably saw God's army and got freaked out. That's just my guess. And it doesn't say it in the text. When the 300 trumpets sounded, the Lord caused the men throughout the camp to turn on each other with their swords. The army fled to Beth Shittah toward Zerara as far as the border of Abel Meholah near Tabith. Israelites from Naphtali, Asher, and all Manasseh were called out, and they pursued the Midianites. Gideon sent messengers throughout the hill country of Ephraim, saying, "Come down against the Midianites and seize the waters of the Jordan ahead of them, as far as Beth-barah." So all the men of Ephraim were called out. They took the waters of the Jordan as far as Beth-barah. They also captured two of the Midianite leaders, Oreb and Zeb. They killed Oreb at the rock of Oreb and Zeb at the winepress of Zeb. They pursued the Midianites and brought the heads of Oreb and Zeb to Gideon, who was by the Jordan. Crazy fight. He did end up calling back some others, some volunteers. Some of them are not pleased with him now. This is again showing the spiral of Israel. The Ephraimites asked Gideon, chapter 8, verse 1, "Why have you treated us like this? Why didn't you call us when you went to fight Midian?" And they criticized him sharply. But he answered them, "What have I accomplished compared to you?" There's no mention of God here. The Ephraimites are angry with Gideon because they wanted part of the spoil and didn't understand why he didn't let them in on this really good deal. Gideon compares himself to them, but doesn't bother to mention that it was God that gave him the victory and he really should be the one that takes all the spoil. But he appeases them with a soft answer. At least he does that. Proverbs 15:1, a soft answer turns away wrath. What have I accomplished compared to you? Aren't the gleanings of Ephraim's grapes better than the full grape harvest of Abiezer? God gave Oreb and Zeb, the Midianite leaders, into your hands. What was I able to do compared to you? At this, the resentment against him subsided. The rest of this section, I'm going to continue just through verse 21. It seems to me, and it's real hard to see this in here, it seems like Gideon goes off and decides he's going to do a battle on his own. From this point where he's compared himself to the Ephraimites and tried to determine which one's mightier, which one's better, God's not mentioned in this section. He doesn't say, and then the Lord said, chase Zeba and Zalmunna. He just went off and did it himself. Verse 4, Gideon and his 300 men, exhausted, yet keeping up the pursuit, came to the Jordan and crossed it. He said to the men of Succoth, give my troops some bread. They are worn out, and I am still pursuing Zeba and Zalmunna, the kings of Midian. But the officials of Succoth said, do you already have the hands of Zeba and Zalmunna in your possession? Why should we give bread to your troops? Gideon replied, just for that, when the Lord has given Zeba and Zalmunna into my hand, I will tear your flesh with desert thorns and briars. From there he went up to Peniel and made the same request of them. He wanted bread. He wanted some water. But they answered as the men of Succoth had. So he said to the men of Peniel, when I return in triumph, I will tear down this tower. Now Zeba and Zalmunna were in Karkor with a force of about 15,000 men. All that were left of the armies of the eastern peoples, 120,000 swordsmen, had fallen. Gideon went up by the route of the nomads east of Nobah and Jogbaha and fell upon the unsuspecting army. Zeba and Zalmunna, the two kings of Midian, fled, but he pursued them and captured them, routing their entire army. Gideon, son of Joash, then returned from the battle by the pass of Heres. He caught a young man of Succoth and questioned him, and the young man wrote down for him the names of the 77 elders, or officials of Succoth, of the town. Then Gideon came and said to the men of Succoth, here are Zeba and Zalmunna, about whom you taunted me by saying, do you already have the hands of Zeba and Zalmunna in your possession? Why should we give bread to your exhausted men? He took the elders of the town and taught the men of Succoth a lesson by punishing them with desert thorns and briars. And that probably brought their death. He also pulled down the tower of Peniel and killed the men of the town. Then he asked Zeba and Zalmunna, what kind of men did you kill at Tabor? Men like you, they answered, each one with the bearing of a prince. Gideon replied, those were my brothers, the sons of my own mother. As surely as the Lord lives, if you had spared their lives, I would not kill you. Turning to Jether, the oldest son, he said, kill them. But Jether did not draw his sword because he was only a boy and was afraid. It would have been a real honor for him, something that he would have been praised for the rest of his life, was to be able to kill a couple of Midianite kings. So his father was trying to give him a blessing or an honor. Zeba and Zalmunna said, come do it yourself. As is the man, so is his strength. They kind of taunted him. So Gideon stepped forward and killed them and took the ornaments off their camels' necks. That second half of the war, that battle, seems to be more of a battle that he's fighting in his own strength for his own purposes. He's got a personal vendetta, and he goes after him. We need to learn that doing things in the power of the Lord is how we should do it. And then when he gives us victory, let's not go off and think that we did it in our own strength. Amen. Please.